support I needed for my loss wasn't there, and I realized for so many others, they were searching for the same kind of support I was, a non-judgmental source of support. And then I decided, you know, somebody's got to do it. And it was really my way of being a mom to Grace. It's my way of honoring her and keeping her memory and her name alive. And and so I just started to, it started with the website. And I started to get about 100 emails a day from people around the world saying, I get you, get it, and you yeah. understand, and your information is so helpful. And so then it grew from there to all the different services we now provide.
I like what you say there, Candy, because when you say you keep her memory alive, because I hear this from so many parents who've had a miscarriage or a stillborn or infant death, is that more so than, you know, like parent loss is catastrophic. But when you go into the area that you're talking about, it's even more less support. That's my perception. Do you see that also?
Absolutely. You know, when you have a child who has lived a life long enough for people to have shared memories with that right. with that baby or infant, you have something to talk about and something in common with those people who have experienced knowing that person. But with a stillbirth or miscarriage, that opportunity has not happened. And for so many, they never saw, experienced, felt, knew in any way the right. child that you lost. And therefore, they kind of are easily forgotten, unfortunately, by those around you.
And, you know, and that shared memory, that you put that in such good words that you use to describe that, because the mom has a lot of shared memories, more so than the father.
Right, and even bereaved dads have shared with me, I feel gypped because, you know, I really got nothing from my experience with right. my baby. At least my wife felt the kicking, and she got to have that experience of that baby growing inside her, but, you know, all I got to do was hold my baby when they were dead and at birth, you know, and that's really a hard thing for dads, too, and hard for them when they admit, how am I to connect with this baby? I didn't get to know that baby. And so many fathers really start to get excited about their kids when
right.
they're smiling and interacting and kind of relating back to them. And that's a real point of connection right. for fathers, and they don't get that opportunity.
You know, and a lot of times people don't understand the loss of dreams. Like, those dreams about having that child were long before the baby was even conceived. Right.
Exactly. Yep. And for women, when they see that plus sign or two right. lines on a stick, That love and that excitement, it's right there. It's already in full glory, and it's ready to go and run with it. And, you know, women who are planning for, especially women like myself who dealt with infertility, you go through the month after month struggle and trial right. of not being able to have this child. And when right. you finally find out you're pregnant, you already envision that baby home with you right. in their nursery, and you're already so excited for everything. You're already planning things like what you'll do for their wedding day, you know.
Right.
So absolutely, it's a trauma of the deepest kind.
I know a lot of parents are listening today because they feel so alone and separated from people who've lost a child, because they get told so much that, well, you can have other children or you can adopt. And that's just like skipping over the whole process of grief and losses, isn't it?
Well, yes, and I believe that grief will find you wherever you are, even if you try to run and hide from it, and it demands to be dealt with. And when we lose a baby, we absolutely have to face that and go through the horror of the dark days and the dark moments and the time to process and allow that baby to have their time in our life of grieving, because a lot of parents I know have, you know, tried to listen to that advice and just have another and just move on or just adopt right. or just forget about it. But those are the people who are calling me now 20 years and 15 right. years after their loss, and they say, no wonder I became an alcoholic and got
right.
divorced and had a lot of problems because I never dealt with my grief.
Right.
And you know, there is a saying that we say in our support groups with Missing Grace support groups is friends will become strangers and strangers
right.
will become friends.
Right.
And there are too many times that it's unfortunate, but it happens. The people around you who have children at the same age and who are going on with
right.
their life, they either can't handle your pain and it's too hard for them to be around you because it's uncomfortable
right.
and they're kind of fearful. Well, you know, you had bad luck. What if that bad luck is contagious? And And also, they don't know what to say to you, and they feel, you know, really just out of sorts around you. And for us, as a bereaved parent, you know, it's pretty tough to constantly have to think about what you say and not make people uncomfortable.
Right.
And so a lot of parents who are processing their grief well, I think they're really good about just being honest about where they're at and saying, you know what, no, today isn't a good day. And, you know, today I really miss my daughter. And I'm not doing so good. You ask me how I'm doing, I'm going to be real with you.
Right.
And my suggestion with that is just talk to parents, be open with them, and be willing to speak their baby's name and give them opportunities to share about the child they love.
You know, I got several emails from people that heard you and heard the recording on Memorial Day weekend. They said, one comment from a listener was, tell them to stop trying to cheer me up all the time.
Exactly.
Did you feel that way too after your
daughter? Yeah. There's no platitude or saying or activity or anything you can do that's going to eliminate the grief process and make it all better.
Right.
The best thing is just to say, I care, I love you, I don't have the right words, I know there are no perfect words, and can I just walk beside you in this journey and be there when you need somebody to listen? And you know, that's the best kind of friend.
Here's another response I get from parents that have lost children in miscarriage. They said, do I have a right to name my baby?
Absolutely.
Even
you know, the people who don't name their miscarried babies, many of them struggle with how to share and acknowledge and love that baby because that baby's nameless. And even if you call a baby Smith, you know, name means a lot, and you can acknowledge, well, we lost, you know, and people will say, well, I didn't know if it was a boy or girl. Well, some people, I just say, you know what, close your eyes and pray about it, and I believe some people get an answer to their heart, and a lot of women have shared with me, you know, I just knew, I just had a sense it was a boy or it was a girl, and then they gave an appropriate name for that baby,
And the other thing,
you can get genetic testing done. A lot of people don't realize this, but you can bring in your miscarriage and say, I want to know if it's a boy or girl, and they can tell you.
Where can they do that? Where can you...
Well, you need to bring in the fetal tissue immediately. You know, they need it within hours of the miscarriage. And if you have a DNC, then you ask for what the baby that they've taken out, you ask them to take that baby and have it tested immediately. And you can have it also tested for chromosomal issues and you know, anomalies and what could have caused the miscarriage, so that you have some understanding going forward what maybe some issues might be in your trying to conceive again. But
you know,
absolutely, if you can, bring the baby in and have it tested to find out if it's boy or girl, because that brings a lot of closure for people.
You know, I hear a lot of yearning from women who have had miscarriages of not knowing if it was a boy or girl. And you're just saying it right out loud, is that there is a need to know.
Absolutely.
And so, like, if they give the baby a name, and then here's another thing that I get of, when they've had the DNC, what do they do with what happened?
Well, you do have a right to ask for your baby's remains. And if you want to have them cremated or buried, parents need to understand they have a right to do that. You know, if you miscarry at home, you'd be able to do what you feel comfortable doing with that. And I have people who have had miscarriages, in fact, multiple miscarriages after their loss of a late-term loss, a stillbirth, what have you, and they've gone back to the cemetery and had the baby buried, the cremated remains of their miscarriage buried with their stillbirth.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's very important. That's a part of you. It's flesh of your flesh. It's bone of your bone, and it's part of, you know, you're loving and longing, and there's no shame and no embarrassment at all in wanting to have those remains and wanting to have that baby kept in a place that's comfortable and comforting to you.
Now,
hospitals do often have a baby burial. They'll take the ashes, they'll cremate them, and they'll put them in a hospital baby cemetery. But you need to ask that as a parent, what are you going to do with the remains of my baby? Because a lot of women are haunted by that later and say, I don't know what happened to my baby.
Right. So one of the moms emailed me and said, would it have been appropriate if I would have had some sort of memorial service after my miscarriage?
I think the memorial service for a baby is one of the most healing and validating things parents can do.
Right.
And I highly recommend they do it. And in fact, I have some friends in Minnesota here, Heidi Kapelinski and Trina Charles. They wrote a book, When a Child Dies, and it's a great book, and it really walks you through how to go through the memorial service and the funeral planning. And if somebody wants to get more information about that, they can write to me at Candy, C-A-N-D-Y, at missinggrace.org, M-I-S-S-I-N-G-G-R-A-C-E.org. And, you know, they've done a beautiful job, and we include that book in our Grace Care Baskets that we deliver to hospitals for bereaved parents. And that does walk people through songs, scriptures, sayings, you know, things to do at the service. And, you know, that's very important. And we had a memorial service for our daughter, had almost 100 people there, and it was a very beautiful and healing thing. And I'm incredibly grateful that we went ahead and took the time and the energy to do that, because that was an important part of our journey.
Do you think that most people would understand the need for parents to have a miscarriage memorial service? And it could be elaborate, and it can be very simple, couldn't it?
Absolutely. People can just have a song sung and a scripture read, or a saying. You know, some people, friends and family around them, have written poems. A poem can be read. You can release a dove. You can release butterflies. You can release a bunch of balloons. You can write things on the balloons. Everybody write a note to the baby on the balloon. And, you know, anything you can do, incredibly, you know, significant and intrinsically special to that family, unique to you, is a beautiful thing. You would have done your own special, unique things in how you raised that child, and there's nothing wrong with doing special, unique things in the way you would honor and commemorate that child in a memorial service or in anniversary dates. Those are incredibly important.
Right.
The one-year birthdays and every birthday after that, those are important dates. Due dates are important dates. People need to understand that the calendar, it takes on a whole new meaning for a bereaved parent. Other people just come and go in the days, and you forget birthdays and you may forget things, but for the bereaved parent, you remember the funeral day, the due date, the day that they died, the birth date, you know, and you have all these other little dates that stick out in your mind. And if you had a preemie or a baby that lived for a while and then died, you have the date of birth and then the date of almost death and the date of actual death. And
you know,
and
you
your
know,
calendar just gets wrapped up, and
right.
and it's very hard for the bereaved parent to go the day-to-day life in the calendar.
You know, when you talk about the due date, that's a really significant date for a lot of them. Is that
Absolutely.
That would have been the day their baby would have been born? You know what we're really learning here on the Life After Loss show is to really be much more compassionate and understanding. And this
mm-hmm.
show really isn't really just for the parents that have gone through this. It's really for anybody listening, is to
Absolutely.
Be much more sensitive and caring during these very difficult times.
Mm-hmm.
What about death certificates for stillborns? A lot of parents We're
very excited to share that Minnesota now does offer a certificate of birth resulting in stillbirth. We worked for 2 years on the legislation, and thank you to Representative Karen Klinzing, Senator Ellen Anderson, and Senator Michelle Bachmann, and we have other senators who were very key in this whole thing. But at any rate, we worked with many different bereaved moms around Minnesota, and we were able to pass the bill. At that time, there were 12 other states that had the Missing Angel Bill enacted, and it is law in Minnesota now that any parent who's ever had a stillbirth, it is a retroactive bill, any parent who has ever had a stillbirth, doesn't matter how many years ago, they have a right now to get a certificate of birth for their baby. And then any parent moving forward who does have a stillbirth will be able to get a certificate of birth resulting in stillbirth for their baby as well.
Okay, so let's give the listeners again, where do they go to get that?
Well, it's on the Minnesota Department of Health website, and you can go to our homepage at missinggrace.org, missinggrace.org, which GRACE is an acronym for Grieve, Restore, Arise, Commemorate, and Educate. And that, on our homepage right there, it says get your certificate of birth, and it'll take you to awareness and prevention of stillbirth part of our website, and you'll be able to click on the link that takes you right to the page to register.
Okay, one of the big things you also do on your website, you talk a lot about cord issues, and that's how your baby Grace died.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing, but people don't realize that in the United States, with the wonderful health care that we have access to, we have every year 40,000 stillbirths a year in the U.S. And people don't realize that number. It's a huge number. And we know, based on NIH, National Institute of Health reporting, and research data that shows more than 10,000. In fact, it's believed to be over 20,000, but we know for sure by fact it's over 10,000 of those babies are cord issue deaths. And cord issues are a multiple. A lot of people don't realize this, but there's many types of cord issues. There's cord entanglement, which is also called nuchal cords. A double nuchal cord, for example, is twice wrapping of the cord around the neck. And body that, wraps.
And that's, and that's what happened with Grace.
No, that was with my subsequent child that lived. Grace had what was called a velamentous cord, and a velamentous cord, the best way to describe that is it's a placental cord connection issue. And velamentous cords, if you look at a tree in the ground and it has the grass all nice and smooth around it, that would be the connection ideally that you would want for the cord to placenta. A velamentous cord is like the tree that goes to the ground and you see all the roots growing on top of the ground. And that is similar to what the velamentous cord looks like. The cord has all the veiny structure on top of the placenta, rather deeply rooted inside the placenta, and it's vulnerable to compromise during the pregnancy and ultimately... there's actually 4,000 babies known for sure to die of velamentous cords a year, and they always need to come early. They are not full-term babies. They need to be delivered early because that cord-to-placenta connection will not sustain a full-term pregnancy. My baby's cord issue was seen on her 20-week ultrasound, but they chose not to address it, and that's what ultimately caused her demise.
You have become very knowledgeable and do a lot of education on this area, haven't you?
Yeah, I am asked to come and speak nationally. I speak at hospitals and at conferences and whatnot, and I also travel with a doctor who delivered our second baby, our subsequent child, Tatum, and he is an OBGYN who's been studying stillbirth for 25 years, and he has found out in large part what causes stillbirth and how to manage a pregnancy. Uh-huh. Prevent it, and he's fantastic.
You know, today this is a special song that Candy picked today. It's "To Where You Are" by Josh Groban, and it is a beautiful song. Candy, we didn't get to talk about your second birth, and I want to have you come back because you are one of the most resilient mothers I have ever talked to. And so thank you for coming
that.
On today. And again, this
thank
song,
you.
"To Where You Are" by Josh Groban.
Thank you.
Say for certain, maybe you're still here. I feel you all around me, your memory so clear. Deep in the stillness, I can hear you speak. You're still an inspiration. Can it be that you are my forever love, and you are watching over me from up above? Fly me up to where you are beyond a distant star. Faith believing all power can't be seen. As my heart holds you just one beat away, I cherish all you gave me every day. 'Cause you are my forever love, watching from up above. And I believe that angels breathe, and that love will live on and never leave. Fly me up to where you are beyond the distance. to where you are.